Shalom leYudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf Dalas Be'iel, Tavshinayin Hey, Parshas Behukosai, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 12 May, 2015, webcasting from Living Proof of the Failure of the Non-Jewish Jewish Project. It started, leastwise in the modern era, over two centuries ago, and in case you are wondering when the modern era began, I believe professional historians mark that as the discovery of the New World, which makes sense to me. When that happened, a major blow was struck against Christianity. When people took the discovery to mean that the world was indeed round, and therefore the church was not infallible. No accident, I think, that a mere 25 years later, Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses, his philosophical statements, to the door of the cathedral in Wittenberg, Germany, and the Protestant Reformation got underway, which led to the English break from Rome 20 years later under Henry VIII, whose remarkable daughter Elizabeth founded the Church of England in 1558. This led to a sea change, not yet a real revolution, but still a change in European attitudes toward Jews. Breaking free from Rome, English threw off the Catholic prohibition on translating the Tanakh, the Bible of the Jews, into a language people could understand. The church called for the death penalty in those days, which had been used, against anyone who did that. Hard as it is to believe today, what that prohibition did for the common Christian was keep him in the dark about what was written in his Old Testament, that on the one hand Christians said was passé, its expiration date had come and gone, but they kept it around anyway, albeit in the unintelligible 5th century Latin translation of Jerome, which was based on the 3rd century BCE Greek Septuagint. This prohibition on learning what was in it was so un-Jewish. Thus, in an age of Elizabeth I, many of Europe's thinking people turned to the study of Hebrew as a hobby. Queen Christina of Sweden, famously played in the movies by Greta Garbo, used to pay for lessons in Hebrew from a rabbi in Hamburg. The rebellion against the Church of Rome also made kosher rebellion itself against religious authorities, and not surprisingly, the Church of England would find itself also protested against by breakaway sects, one of whom was called the Puritans, who found the C of E as dictatorial as Rome in its oppression of them. So the Puritans fled England and settled in Holland for a bit before deciding to escape Europe altogether and settle in the New World, in the new colony of Virginia. About 100 of them set sail, but for several reasons they didn't make it to Virginia, and they came ashore in what was not yet a crown colony in the north. They made landfall far north of Virginia and called their settlement Plymouth. Before they came ashore, they discussed and wrote down the rules for living in this community of about 100 settlers. Having been at sea for weeks, all they had for writing material was used paper that they had used during their regular onboard Hebrew lessons, for the Puritans were seized by the Old Testament and wanted to know what was really in it and to use it as a model for their community, and they had to know Hebrew for that, so they took a piece of paper, which on one side were there were two parallel columns of words. It was an English-Hebrew vocabulary list. They flipped it over and started writing what history would call the Mayflower Compact, contract after the name of the ship they were on, and thus begins American society as we know it today. The Puritans were still decades away from feeling positive toward living Jews, but otherwise they were in awe of the ones they read about and studied in Tanakh. They gave their children names such as Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob, Leah, Rachel, Abigail, Jedediah, Ichabod. 16 years later, the survivors of these settlers saw that their community, whose political and religious leaders were one and the same, had to plan for their future, so they established a school to train future ministers, and they created a four-year program during which every year the seminarians had to study Hebrew. And at graduation, the best student in the class overall would give a commencement speech, not in Latin, but Biblical Hebrew. The college was called Harvard, and the best student at commencement every year gave his valedictory speech in Lashon Kodesh, the Holy Tongue. And that went on for 150 years. During the American Revolution of the 1770s, the three rebel leaders tasked by the Continental Congress to draft a Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Ben Franklin, were also asked to design a logo for their revolution. And one idea was a scene of Moses leading the children of Israel through the Red Sea. They looked upon King George III as Pharaoh and called him that. At the same time, a suggestion was made to legislate not one but two official languages. One would be English and the other Hebrew. Didn't pass. But in that revolutionary period, that is, in the wake of the successful American Revolution made by men, many of whom, three centuries after Columbus and a century after Galileo's persecution by the Vatican, for saying the earth revolves around the sun and not the other way around, they had become post-Christians. And so in 1786, 2 years after the war officially ended, the students at Harvard rebelled against the 150-year-old tradition of having the commencement speech delivered in Hebrew. And that was the end of that. Coincidentally, that very same year, a rabbi in Germany passed on after decades of cozying up to the post-Christian philosophers in that country, such as Immanuel Kant, who revered him, and perhaps in part for this, his bending of Jewish beliefs to go along with the Enlightened Age. Moses Mendelssohn never stopped living a kosher Jewish life, but like that one tiny hole in a dike, his thoughts would lead 2 decades later in Germany to the founding of the Reform Movement, which today is dying at warp speed. Mendelssohn's error, and the Reform error, is believing in a rapprochement with Gentiles, which sounds nice, but its danger is the breaking down of the separation between Jew and Gentile, which can only lead, as it has, to terrible destruction among the Jewish people. Christians lost their faith in the 19th century, and before even. Jews lost their faith, too. Jews were emancipated. The Jews built massive synagogues that made the unintended statement that their congregations had lost the hope and the will to return to Eretz Yisrael. Indeed, this was the meaning of the Reform Movement when they called their assembly halls temples. They were saying to their German neighbors, "We are Germans who have no loyalty to the Jewish nation that dreams of returning to the land of Israel. Judaism for us is a philosophy." So, the early Reform even moved the Sabbath to Sunday to be more like their neighbors. And the rest is history. The emancipation and the de-Judaizing in the end failed. In 1848, the Spring of Nations, as it was called, referring to small nationalities in Europe under the jackboot of the Habsburg Empire, there were nationalist rebellions all over Europe, and one of their sidelights was major Jew killing. Hence, in the decades of the 1840s and 50s, 250,000, mostly Reformed Jews, fled Germany to the United States and other countries, one imagines. By the 1870s, anti-Jew feeling had so swelled, a new term had to be invented, and it was called anti-Semitism. In mid-century, the Jew-hater Karl Marx wrote a pamphlet called A World Without Jews, which called for their natural evolutionary disappearance as the world moved to socialism and communism. It didn't call for mass murder. In 1889, though, a baby was born in Austria who would try that. His name was Adolf Hitler. Such was the reaction of many Europeans and post-Christians to the emancipation of the Jews. They didn't like it big time. In this period as well, in reaction to the rising Jew hatred camouflaged as anti-Semitism, ooh, how intellectual that sounds, a German-speaking Jew would inspire some followers to emulate the national liberation movements in Europe, which would lead in 1914 to the First World War, and he chose to treat the Jewish people as just another small people with national liberation aspirations. His name was Theodor Herzl. And his movement, like the Reformed Jews he was raised among, aspired to normalizing the Jewish people. One can certainly salute the great successes of the post-religious Zionists, but they too were mistaken if they thought the world was ready for their project of de-Judaization. For sure, in Europe, post-Holocaust, the level of murderous thinking has diminished radically, but a perusal of Herzl's thinking suggests he didn't know bupkis about the Arabs and Islam. You know, the billion-plus Muslims today in the world, half of whom surround us 6 million Jews here on three sides, they are people utterly dead to the horrors that period of Jew hatred brought down, not only on the Jews, but even many more Gentiles. They have yet to understand that that kind of lunatic Jew hatred is dangerous to them. For this major slice of humankind, it's as if the Enlightenment never happened, the rebellion against Rome never happened, no Reformation. Yesterday, at the Mishra Adumim intersection, a Muslim terrorist shrieking Allahu Akbar raced up to a Jewish 19-year-old man and stabbed him. He's okay. They say his wounds are only moderate. But if I were an employee of this generation's American administration, you know, successor to the Puritans 100 years later, I couldn't say that. You can't say Muslim and terrorist in the same sentence, according to the Muslim Jew hater now in charge of the America established centuries ago. Indeed, Theodor Herzl seems never to have considered the possibility that Israel would be opposed by the Islamic Empire, whose views of Jews are a positively dark age. Yeah, there was no Renaissance in that culture, no Reformation, no Enlightenment. Indeed, the famous Belgian historian Henri Pirenne made the case that the Dark Ages were so named because of the rise of Islam, this enemy of civilization and culture. Herzl likely never dreamed that last week a so-called Palestinian, he never heard that name in his time, a Palestinian Authority parliamentarian, never mind this parliament has not met in like a decade, visited three Ishmaelitic families in the Holy Land to present them with honorary plaques, for they are the families whence came three sons who had in the year 2000 in a police station in Ramallah so battered three Jewish men, their faces and heads, they were unrecognizable. They had to be identified by dental and other records. Three Arabians who joyously plunged their hands into the pulp of their Jewish faces that they had made in order to glory in the blood and show up their bloody hands to their friends. Yours truly keeps waiting year in and year out for the Israeli government to be as public as Palestinian Media Watch is when it comes up with these news stories all the time. I would love to see Prime Minister Netanyahu call a live press conference promising a major announcement, assemble all the hundreds of foreign reporters based here, and make AIDS presentations with photographs of these Jewish victims, and tell the media a major announcement that with such as the PA that hands out such awards, Israel will never make peace. Indeed, the PA, if it wants peace, he can say, with Israel, must publicly renounce such behavior and can start by thanking Israel for letting their leaders live every day. If we were not Jews, we wouldn't. If we were not the hated Jews, and not the heirs also of de-Judaizing secular Zionists, we should arrest and execute Mahmoud Abbas and Saeb Arafat and Jabril Rajoub in public for their savage murders by the thousands of innocent Jewish people, and non-Jewish people no less. You know, the uninvolved bystanders in their atrocities. I hope before my lifetime is up, I understand why Israel officials has never availed itself of all the material archived by Palestinian Media Watch to make the case that Israel will not deal with the PLO, disguised as the PA, not deal with them anymore. This was the big idea of the Oslo freaks. Israel today likewise objects to the P5 plus one countries negotiating with Iran. Well, Israel would have a stronger case by taking its own medicine and writing off the PA. Israel has the right to tell the world that the age of Oslo is over. Oslo was the attempt over decades to negotiate a nice agreement with the Arabs here, but it failed big time. Israel should say that now, as news reports tell us, that the what the EU is cooking up, Israel will not go along. And a demand is to be made that Israel and the PA resume negotiations, which is camouflage for pressing Israel to hand over the heart of its country to these anti-Semitic savages. Israel should say, we tried that. That was the big idea of our post-Jewish enlightened ones, Balin, Peres, Rabin, etc., but it did not work. And now we are seeing a recrudescence of anti-Jewism in Europe, not seen since the war ended 70 years ago. Two generations ago, in the news today, was an item about the Dutch, who, forget about Anne Frank, the Dutch were major collaborators with the occupying Nazis in hunting down their Jews. Today's Dutch government is planning to dictate to Dutch Jews living in Israel that Judea is verboten, it's off limits to Jews. And if they live in Judea and Samaria and receive social security payments, the elderly, they will be punished by having them reduced. How dare these Jews live on land stolen from the ancient Palestinians, the ancient legendary landlords? It seems a 90-year-old Dutch Jewess recently made Aliyah to live with her family in somewhere in Judea and Samaria, and had her payment reduced by more than a third. The news evidently embarrassed official Holland, and they rescinded the punishment, but insist that a program like this will be rethought and reinstated in the future in some form. The Europeans, these post-Christians, as the post-Christians in 19th and 20th century Europe, learned to hate Jews for a post-Christian theory called antisemitism, so today's Europeans genuflect before the God of Palestinian nationalism. Today, that's legitimate, the legitimate way of keeping the tradition alive of hating Jews and hurting them. Another way is to pour millions of euros into NGOs in Israel whose work is smearing Jews with guilt. Not for killing Jesus and sucking out the blood of non-Jews at Passover time. It is, though, for persecuting the poor, poor victims of Jewish nationalism. Over 100 new nations have entered the United Nations since World War II, almost every one a rebellion against a colonial power, a European power, who joyously celebrate their independence every year, but one of them has been chastised for becoming a racist imperialist power itself. They're breaking free, the Jews, of not only the British Empire, but the Arab and Muslim empires. Has become an act of imperialist racism on their part, unique in the history of modern national liberation movements. And it is these NGOs which today receive millions from the United Nations and Europe, American NGOs, to smear Jews with war crimes, aggression, and racism. NGO Monitor here, founded and run by Bar-Ilan Professor Jerry Steinberg, just released a study of these NGOs for the upcoming conference called the Global Forum for Combating Antisemitism. Steinberg's project highlights the truth that not only do European governments fund anti-Israel propaganda, some of it is outright old-fashioned, timeless Jew hatred propaganda. Yeah, even the birth of Israel has yet to put an end to this functionally hallucinatory mental illness.
ואלה יקדישו לשם ממלכתך. אין קדוש כשם כי אין בלתך. Thank you. ובכן אקדישך בלב ובכן אקדישך בלב ובכן
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa.
And that was an adaptation, a modern adaptation, of a traditional Moroccan melody. Indeed, delusional hostility towards the Jewish people is back in fashion in Europe, and no less in the rest of the West. And for sure, as in the past, it is not an exclusively Gentile project. The Washington Free Beacon today reported on efforts by APN, that's Americans for Peace Now, and of course J Street, to sabotage legislation pending in Congress intended to threaten European countries with economic sanctions if they go through with the agenda of the BDS types. And of course, these organizations' members are anti-Jew Jews who relish sticking it to the world's only Jewish state in the best tradition of Christian anti-Jewism, with the way anti-Jew Jews thousands of years ago allied themselves with the Roman Empire. In fact, Christianity began as the project of anti-Jew Jews, Jesus and his 12 supporters. For the first century of Christianity, all Christians were Jews living here. They tried to persuade the rest of the country that the Messiah had come, but with nothing changing, his message was rejected. And in the Bar Kokhba revolt that began a century after the crucifixion of that Jewish man from Nazareth, along with 250,000 other Jews, a three-year rebellion from 132 to 135 began. And then the Christian Jews threw in with the savage Romans as never before, and that was the end of their community here. In the college religion departments, they're called by the scholars Christian Jews. So we have seen such types as Americans for Peace Now in the past. We've seen J Street types in the past at that point, and even hundreds of years before the Roman era. We saw them in the second century before the Common Era, in the age of the Maccabees, whose war began not against the Greeks, but anti-Jew Jews, who threw in their lot with them. It's a chronic problem with this people.
בואו נפזר את מסך הערפל, בואו נעמוד באור ולא בצל. עד מתי נמשיך לברוח אל משחקים של כוח? מותר לך לבכות קצת לפעמים, משהו קורא לך בפנים. ספר לי קצת על רגעי הפחד, קל הרבה יותר לפחד ביחד. וכשרוחות קרות תסערו בחוץ, תזעק אליו בתפילה. יום אחד אולי תפסיק לרוץ בין הצללים, וכשרוחות קרות תסערו בחוץ, תזעק אליו בתפילה. יום אחד אולי תפסיק לרוץ בין הצללים. בנשמה. משחקים של כוח, מותר לך לבכות קצת לפעמים, כשמשהו קורה לך בפנים. ספר לי קצת על רגע הפחד, קל הרבה יותר לפחד ביחד, כשרוחות קרות תיסערו בחוץ, תסתכל אף בתפילה, יום אחד אולי תפסיק לרוץ בין הצללים בנשמה.
Well, in all candor, the history lesson in this webcast has been part of a deliberate attempt to avoid saying anything about the top story in Israel today, which remains the struggle by the Prime Minister Netanyahu to form a government, and it's not a pretty sight. Everybody is coming off badly. Bugi Herzog and company are simply shameless, virtually comatose in their hostility to the people of Israel who voted clearly for Bibi to lead them. This character said yesterday he was going to replace Bibi, bring him down. And never mind the implicit insult at the clear wish of the electorate a month ago for him, not you. On the other side, Bibi has to promise millions of taxpayers money to finance the invention of utterly useless government ministries to satisfy his fellow Likudniks' demand for them. He is in the middle this week of legislation canceling legislation that limits a government to 18 ministries and thus makes a mockery of legislation as a serious endeavor. I remember when, for example, Assad Jr. was made dictator in Damascus after the death of his father. The Syrian constitution said he was too young, so one morning they called parliament together and wrote a new constitution. In Israel these days, it seems the political system is not much better. Yuck. That's it for this Tuesday. Until Thursday, God willing. Laila tov, Meretz Yisrael.